following is a violent collection of some of the best bloody items on the Cornucopia Radio Show, broadcast on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, and butchered to the world via the internet. All murders played is either killing via fair use agreement, or is podcast death via the Creative Commons license, and I'm going to kill you all. For more details, see the podcast credits on www.cornucopia-radio.co.uk, because all work and no play make Jack a dull boy, because all work and no play make Jack a dull boy, because all work and no play make Jack a dull boy, because all work and no play make Jack a dull boy, because all work and no play make Jack a dull boy.
Nobody knows where it came from or where it started. There were theories, of course. There always are. Some said it had arrived from a crash meteorite, while others believe it had accidentally escaped from a secret government laboratory. That's a theory I was quite fond of myself. Not that it matters much now, I guess. It goes without saying that all the religious crazies in America seem to think it was a message from God. After all, what else could it have been? They were so sure that these were the end days, and boy did they swamp the streets to tell us about it. I remember seeing a report on the 6 o'clock news with some elderly woman holding up a sign saying, "Repent, the rapture is coming." It wasn't. No. Nobody ever gets to leave this party early. You're not leaving. You're staying here. You're going nowhere. You're staying. In the first few weeks, we still held on to a glimmer of hope. It wasn't much, but it was enough. Countries across the world were completely paralysed and isolated. Air and sea travel was practically non-existent. And one by one, every TV and radio station blipped into infinity. Until the only message left, broadcasting around our heads, was to stay in our homes. Stay in your home. Don't leave your home. Home is where you belong. Don't leave. Don't go. There's nothing out here for you. Your home. You and your home. Stay in your home. Stay in your home. Stay in your home. Stay. 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 To begin with, the first sign of infection. You'd hang a white cloth outside your front door. Then there'd be a knock. Large men in protective suits would arrive. They would take you away. The radio said they would look after you. Everybody knew what they meant. My husband and son were looked after 6 days ago. The first sign is always the same. I remember Jack running into our bedroom as tears of blood ran down his face. He is only seven. I whispered into his ear and told him everything would be okay. Don't be scared. I'll always protect you. Don't be scared. There's nothing to be scared of. Don't be scared. Don't be scared. The more blood I wiped away, the more he cried. Don't be scared, I told him. The knock on the door came later that day. I begged and cried. I screamed. I screamed and I cried. I wanted to go with them. I had to. But I wasn't showing any signs of infection. I knew I was infected. They knew I was infected, but those were the rules. A swift rifle butt to the face, and I was on the ground, bleeding my infected blood, spitting out my infected teeth. They were gone. Don't be scared, I told him. To begin with, I hoped that they'd both been treated well in their final hours, taken to a hospital and allowed to die peacefully. But now? Well, now I secretly hope the stories of roadside executions were true. I hope it was quick. I hope he wasn't scared. Things have changed. The voice on the radio has new instructions for us. It tells us how it can make all the pain go away. How to make things better. As long as we don't go anywhere. As long as we stay. I bleed now. I leave a trail around the house. The radio tells me to make some kind of white cross on the window. The men will knock at my door. They will push an envelope through. The men will barricade me into my own home. They will take the pain away. The envelope contains medication. I like medication. It makes me feel warm. So warm. So lovely and warm. I sit on the couch now as I think these very exact thoughts that you are hearing me think. The couch feels warm, wet and sticky. Something seems to be hanging off my arm. It feels like it doesn't belong, so I pull it away. Whatever it is, I don't need it anymore. Just like I didn't need all that stuff connected to my face earlier. Even if I could, I wouldn't want to open my eyes now. I feel so warm, so lovely and warm. But behind the warmth, I can hear things. Things squelch and drip as they fall to the floor. Things which sound so much like me. So much like me. Something in my mouth. Something where my tongue used to be. It feels like it doesn't belong. So I let it fall to the floor. I slowly sink into the couch, feeling wonderfully less than I've ever been before. It's nice to be liquid. Liquids have more fun. Liquids are warm, and I like being warm. So lovely and warm. I no longer belong. And what's the point of no longer belonging? My head leans forward in agreement and doesn't stop. It leans forward across the floor and rolls away as my body continues to sink into the couch. I don't have to worry about being warm anymore. Over the next few days, the flies begin to comfort me. They start to look after me. I can't hear or see anything anymore, because I'm not anything anymore. But I'm sure the voice is still telling me that everything will be okay.
What instruments do skeletons play? Trombone.
The Cornucopia Podcast Halloween Special. We're dead funny.
For 283 years I have existed. No solid form of which to speak. Inside this golden chalice, my prison, my home, I am weak. I have longed for release, yet no salvation has been shown. So, here I am for now, no skin, no bone. a stagnant liquid is all that exists. Where once I was strength and power, blood and thought are what remains, a fluid that grows more putrid by the hour. 27 years after my birth, banished to the cell was I. The chance of return to glory, it diminished as the centuries passed by. I was accused of a brutal reign. They say I ruled with an iron fist. I was charged with horrific crimes, and even blamed for the day of the Black Mist. My subjects were short-sighted. No one could see my aim. And as my body was stripped away, my blood was tortured and boiled upon the justice flame. What was done to me was a vile intrusion. If I'd had a solid form, scars would still show. Death would have been some comfort, but thanks to my people, this is all I'll ever know. The humiliation I have to suffer, being transported in a jeweled chalice. The mind can't begin to grasp who has been shown the most malice. There was much rejoice at a punishment so savage. Now a telepathist is my voice, and a servant my carriage.
There was a brief time in the last century when the devil was cool. Kooky cats like Aleister Crowley and Anton LaVey helped to give the King of Evil a jaunty spin. But he soon started to fall out of favour with the public, mainly due to appearing on too many shitty Iron Maiden albums, pandering to the 13-year-old goth market, and most of all his own lack of personal growth. However, the devil wants his message to resonate to a new generation. But to do this, he's going to need to recast himself as a Renaissance demon. It's time for him to drop a few vices and back off this whole soul-torturing thing. In short, it's time for Satan to hire an image consultant. The first thing that has to change is that hell is going to need a major renovation and rethink. Nobody wants to visit any type of hell that has all those fiery pits of torture that the devil has been pushing for well over a millennium. And also, isn't it about time the devil gave up the horns and pitchfork? These things make him seem emotionally closed off, and it's just a crutch to stop people getting to know the real him. I suggest an entire wardrobe overhaul, where Satan will sport M&S linen slacks, cardigans, and maybe even a trendy sports jacket or two. Oh, and the name Satan has got to go. It's just got such a negative connotation. Kind of like Adolf, Osama, or Celine Dion. Might I suggest something more friendlier, more marketable, like, Slappy. My final suggestion for Satan, sorry Slapping, is that he should try and patch up his relationship with God. Maybe try doing a good turn every now and then, and that he pray more. If Darth Vader can be redeemed, then so can Slapping. And if he ignores my suggestion, well, he can go straight to hell.
Why do demons and ghouls hang out together? Because demons are a ghoul's best friend.
The Cornucopia Podcast Halloween Special. We're dead funny.
The maggot-infested corpse was placed on the floor. A feast brought to us, come one, come all. Quick, tell the younglings that dinner is served. Everyone's invited to the annual ball. Scurrying from the cracks and crevices came the offspring of the brood. Slime and bile dripped from the walls as a putrid stench rose from the food. Teeth sunk into rotting skin, bones sucked until bleached white. Blood drank in ceremonious ritual, organs savoured with each bite. The kidneys were particularly tasty, and liver flavoured with beer. Each mouthful brought ravenous delight, no others were allowed near. The bladder was pierced by fingernail, the content was drunk with haste. Brain was for dessert and, meeting with tradition, mashed into a paste. After much rejoice and humour, the second course was ready. An aroma filled the feasting hall, an odour that felt extremely heady. Four limbs ripped from its torso, the animal was torn apart. The fur used to decorate the floor, congealed blood made into a tart. The same fate befell this beast, and even one more. All devoured with just as much glee as the poor soul that had gone before. In all, the eaten bodies that night numbered three. The creatures had finally gorged themselves, flesh filling their swollen bellies. All that was left of the victims by the end were broken antlers, a huge red suit, and a pair of shiny white wellies.
Why don't ghosts have fans? They get booed.
The Cornucopia Podcast Halloween Special. We're dead funny.
Whenever anything is written which is too amazing to have come from the soul of any man or woman, it is often joked that they must have borrowed the devil's typewriter, a typewriter which has weaved its way through the history of literature, used by some of the greatest writers that have lived, their every word printed in bright red, bold ink. You should all know the legend of how it began, but for the few who stare back blankly, a story must be told of the ultimate price paid, a tale which, like many told over time, changes and adapts to the teller's whim, but at its core never alters. It happened over 100 years ago. The two met and fell in love. She did not realize how much, but he surely did. He felt a love for her like no man had ever loved a woman. It was a love that could shape a universe, slow down time itself, and strip away the very core of life to its inner fruit. But she would never know, because there had never been any sentence spoke or written of which could describe such an emotion, and he felt pain. The pain of knowing and yet never being able to explain. He had to find a way, for the fear of losing her pierced his heart. Because although she would never leave, unless he could describe what he couldn't explain, he would never really know. He found himself at the hanging tree, the oldest tree in the forest, said by many to be older than the forest itself, a place which 1,000 years before saw sacrifice and blood to a red moon, a place which is said to point the way for all lost souls. He begged for the words to explain what he couldn't, crying out for the way, and was answered with an image. One typewriter, one drop of blood, a purchase, a commitment. A few days later, he sat in front of the machine he had bought. His job didn't pay much, and he had to beg and borrow to afford such an item. When the clerk tried to sell him a bottle of ink for the typewriter, he declined. "I have my own," he answered. And as the knife pierced the top of his finger, the blood dripped, dripped, dripped into the machine. And as he typed, the words danced on the page in bright red ink and explained everything he couldn't. But the ink ran dry long before he had finished. So again, he had to cut himself. Again. 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 And every time, deeper, deeper, deeper. And later that night, as he spoke to her the words he had seen appear on the page, she finally understood the depths of his love. They held each other, felt each other's warmth, and tasted the deepest part of their souls. They bit down hard, the sweetest meat always found closest to the bone. At that moment, no two people had ever been so in love. He had said all he needed to. But how could he go back? What if there was more to say? Would she still want him when he was only using his normal words, his below average tongue? His blood flowed as he continued to type. Every night he would tell her his story, hold her, and let their essence mix, until eventually he had no more blood left to give, his fingers numb from the release. What could he do? He didn't want to stop, to go back to what he once was. He began to notice people more. People at work, people on the street, people in the dark, those who seemed alone, without companionship, without love. If only they knew, they would surely give up their lives for him. Who wouldn't want their blood to be used to tell a story of eternity? No, he couldn't. He wasn't a monster. But still, just one or two people, the loneliest of the lonely. Nobody would miss them. Nobody would cry for them. Drip. 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 As the blood drained into the typewriter, their lives had been given for the greater good, and he would not forget their sacrifice. His heart would beat twice as fast for each of them. The words typed would be more universal than ever before, because nobody ever dies in vain. Nobody ever dies in vain. Many red moons later, the police stand in front of his wooden frame door, preparing to break it down. It was always going to be a matter of time. He was wrong. Somebody is always missed. Everybody is cried for. And the trail will always lead back to you. 47 people had given their lives to him. They had helped him write his love through their open necks and gaping wrists. He wasn't a monster, just a man in love. She laid upstairs, softly, gently, quietly. Her eyes still, her skin blue. He had confessed all. She had looked at him, and she knew. She had always known. This was enough for her, just never for him. She whispered in his ear, trying to explain that sometimes you don't need words. As the tears rolled down her face, she lovingly caressed the sharpest, cruelest blade and drew it across her hands and wrists. The tears and blood fell into the typewriter as she began to mark her last words. He saw, he read, and he finally knew. As beneath him, the police smashed down the door.
Why do ghosts like to ride elevators? It raises their spirits.
The Cornucopia Podcast Halloween Special. Where Death funny.
In February of 1936, Budapest police were investigating the suicide of a local shoemaker, Joseph Keller. The investigation showed that Keller had left a suicide note in which he quoted the lyrics of a recent popular song. The song was Gloomy Sunday. The fact that a man chose to quote the lyrics of a little-known song may not seem very strange. However, the fact that over the years this song has been directly associated with the deaths of over 100 people is quite strange indeed. Following the event described above, 17 additional people took their own lives. In each case, Gloomy Sunday was closely connected with the circumstances surrounding the suicide. Among those included are two people who shot themselves while listening to a gypsy band playing the tune. Several others drowned themselves in the Danube while clutching the sheet music of Gloomy Sunday. One gentleman reportedly walked out of a nightclub and blew his brains out after having requested the band to play the suicide song. In Berlin, a young shopkeeper hung herself. Beneath her feet lay a copy of Gloomy Sunday. In New York, a pretty typist gassed herself, leaving a request that Gloomy Sunday should be played at her funeral. Many claim that broken romances are the true causes of these suicides. However, this is debatable. For instance, one man jumped to his death from a seventh-story window, followed by the wailing strains of Gloomy Sunday. He was over 80 years old. In contrast to this, a 14-year-old girl drowned herself while clutching a copy of the suicide song. Perhaps the strangest of all was the case of an errand boy in Rome who, having heard a beggar humming the tune, parked his cycle, walked over to the beggar, gave him all his money, and then sought his death in the waters beneath a nearby bridge. The composer, Rezzo Serez, who in 1933 wrote Gloomy Sunday, was as bewildered as the rest of the world. Although he wrote the song on the breakup of his own romance, he never dreamed of the results which would follow. When questioned as to just what he had in mind when he wrote the song, Serez replied, "I stand in the midst of this deadly success as an accused man. This fatal fame hurts me. I cried all of the disappointments of my heart into this song, and it seems that others, with feelings like mine, have found their own hurt in it." Shortly after the song's release, Serez contacted his ex-lover and made plans for a reunion. The next day, the girl took her life through the use of poison. By her side was a piece of paper containing two words, Gloomy Sunday. Rezzo Serez also committed suicide in 1968. Over the past couple of minutes, these are the only confirmable or true facts I've actually spoken. The myth of Gloomy Sunday has grown over many, many years. It's an urban legend, a spook story, a cautionary tale. A very interesting one, granted, but certainly not a real one, and certainly not a curse. Halloween is full of these types of legends, and if you ever start to believe them, then something has gone very, very wrong. This is just a very sad song. That's all it is. You're not going to commit suicide if you hear it. You're not.
Como Ruba. sarno passa il viraggio. Ora solo cade la cena, tempo lo mi chiamavo. Almo qua scherga te, vo sarno psi la lu. Vano son finto io, nel tuo visto io. Fado da somaru, m'indico a vo sarno. Cagni sciopo di solo, segneremo qua. Vesem gyere, hap is lesz koporsó, ravatol gyászlete. Akkor is virág vár, virág és koporsó. Virágos fákon utam utolsó. Nyitva lesz szemem, hogy még egyszer lássolok. Ne félj a szememtől, holtan is hallgat.
Across the city on 93.2 FM and across the world on sheffieldlive.org.
Good morning, this is Sheffield Live coming to you on 93.2 FM on the dial. It's now time for Swing Time with me, your host, John Fowler.
It's Thursday.
Yeah.
It's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's the alternative hour. With who?
Lil.
Lola.
Good evening, Sheffield, or Assalamu Alaikum. Sasri Akal, Namaste, Jahan Jahan Tak, Javed Ki Awaaz Ja Rahi Hai.
Sheffieldlive.org, if you just tuned in. Yes, it is 93.2 FM. This is Class with the Groove.
Believe that, yeah, this is the Vancouver Maneuver, the UK's home of independent Canadian hip hop and such other things, right? You know, CanCon regulations, their tentacles are everywhere. Yeah, it's Esli Price. I got my buddy Fabio. We're dropping our homeboy K Rex mixtape. Yeah, in it.
Sheffield Live. Across the city on 93.2 FM. And across the world on Sheffield Live.
Hi guys and gals, to quote Kenneth Williams, nook your throbbers and away we go. My name's Graham Marshall.
And my name's Sinead Rankin.
And this is Spirit of the Wapentake.
Hello, this is Sheffield Live, you're listening to the Peace in the Park radio show. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Wookie.
Rise and shine, little G, on that early morning feeling.
Hello and welcome to Sheffield Live. This is Communities Live with me, I'm Hannah Flynn.
And I'm Anita Guy.
We've got a very interesting show coming up today.
Watara was around, of course, the People Show. I had an interview with all of them, one by one, and then this is what they have to say.
Cutting edge, conscious, and rooted in real life. This is Sheffield Live.